B61. Number 5B.
Now, as we do that, you see, we help ourselves to rid ourselves of a personal I. Now, as we were thinking about these things and along these lines, another point came into consciousness, namely the question now, what then is the true I? What is then the true thinking subject, the true ego? And naturally, the true I, or us, is always life, truth, and love as the person of God. Person of God says, I'm life, I'm truth, I'm love, I'm the divine principle, the divine person. I'm the thinking I. It's life, truth, and love that really is the infinite impulsion behind everything in experience. That everything, like in the days of creation, you know, that every day of creation has behind itself that trinity of life, truth, and love, which says, let there be light, and there was light, and the light was good. So that behind the seven is always the divine person, the creative principle, life, truth, and love at work. Therefore, we began to see at that point that actually we can see now at point six that the thinking I, the divinely thinking I, or the divinely conscious I, is life, truth, and love on the level of absolute Christian science, which constantly says to us, I'm the impelling life. I'm the impelling creator. I impel everything. It's God life that says what is going to be done. It's God life that says what is going to create and bring forth as a new light. And it's always truth that says to that life, well, that what life impels is the only true thing for you, is the only factual thing for you. And it says as love, and this what life impels and what in truth is the only fact is already at the right at the beginning, at the point of fulfillment and completion. It is not something that has in a long development, the line of development, be fulfilled. I'm already perfect. So that we see that well of life that brings forth only the facts of truth, that well of life is already at the point of fulfillment, in a fulfilled state. So I begin to realize now, what then is happening with my life? What then is happening with me? And I see nothing is happening except that what life, truth, and love as the person of God has in view, what that wants to bring forth. And what does it want to bring forth? It wants to bring forth mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Can you see that I go even a step higher and begin to realize it's not just enough to stay at point five, where I see that only mind within me knows mind. I go a step higher and say, what is it that makes mind manifest itself? What is it that makes spirit unfold itself? What is it that makes soul identify itself in my life? What is that? And I see that's the person of God, life, truth, and love. And so I can sit back and just contemplate what's going really to happen with my life. Namely, with my life, nothing is going to happen except that God is constantly going on. And what is God constantly going on? God constantly says, I'm the impelling life. that brings out only that which is true and which is perfect. I am life, truth, and love. And what is that that I impel? I impel mind to manifest itself. I impel spirit to unfold itself. And I impel soul to identify itself. I impel principle to interpret itself as science. I impel life to bring forth newness of life. I impel truth to give dominion in every situation and the right answer to every situation. And it says, and I am love, I have a plan, and I'm going to fulfill that plan, and that's what's going on, and that's me. That's so to say, what I should experience in my life. Can you see that at that point six, we lift up really that whole existence of man up to a divine plane, up to a divine level, where we see that actually what we have to see and to demonstrate is nothing else but that the impelling life, truth, and love is constantly manifesting itself as mind and unfolding itself as spirit, identifying itself as soul, interpreting itself as principle, so to say, exalting everything as life, giving to everything the true consciousness and true form and the dominion, and fulfilling a terrific big plan of love. If I entertain that in my consciousness, then I give really to my being, to my existence. I would like to say to my being, because being is more spiritual than perhaps existence, but I give to my being and existence a completely divine measure, a divine purpose. And it lifts me right out of all the tiny little problems and tiny little human things that seems to constantly bother us and so on. We suddenly begin to feel that we have a divine life, that no more a human life which we have to improve and which we have to embellish, and the human life that we have to put into balance and bring into balance and things like that. I really then touch science, way above metaphysics. I wonder if I could give you in this way the tone of the point six. Really, can you see how the whole development of the science pushes us somehow constantly over and a new border, over to the other side of a limitation that we have set up without knowing it. Perhaps we have had as an ideal that Christian Science is that which heals us and which solves our problems. Well, that's a very little concept, a very small concept. It's a fix-it shop, as they call it, I think, over here, a fix-it shop, repair shop. It's not really seeing that you can invent a new construction, a new machine, a new industry, a new, which has not been there, which has not been known up to now, that we go into a completely new field, into the field really of the science of spirit. And naturally, that will not happen just by chance. It will happen through the culture, through the true culture of consciousness. And these are steps that can be taken and show us always a step higher. Even at that point, we may feel suddenly that this may not be really the climax, that there is something even higher to that. And that's perhaps what we have here in point seven. that we see that the synonyms of God are the eye or eagle, that they begin to show really something much bigger, namely that the synonyms themselves are the infinite being. That there is but, so to say, that there is but one ego, but one I. That there is not, so to say, that person of God as life, truth, and love, which manifests itself through the seven synonymous terms as if they were two distinct identities, but that it is all one, that there is actually only one I. Only one I. And that that I really includes everything. So that the seven synonymous terms on all the levels of consciousness are constituting the one I, the one ego. And that's naturally a great point, which then Moses has seen at the point 8, where he could see, well, there is only the I am, which is its own I am-ness. Therefore he called God the I am that I am. You see, you begin even to drop the synonymous terms. You see, at the point 7, you still had the seven synonymous term are the I, or in other terms, you take the seven synonymous terms and say, well, they are actually only symbols for something that is one great ego, namely the I. And at that point, we can even drop the synonymous terms. Because the seven synonymous terms are only an analysis of the I, the God I. Can you also see that all what we are doing here, say, as a method of ascending out of physics into metaphysics, out of metaphysics into science, is only a method that does not exist in being. God does not know that. We must always see that these are like a ladder let down from heaven, with few rungs in it, so that they are adapted really to our consciousness, to the human consciousness, in order to give the human consciousness a way how the human consciousness can get out of the human consciousness into the divine consciousness. It's so to say that really loving method that God has given to this age in the way of science to show, I show you a way how you can know what reality is, what God as the I am is, and I let down a ladder with various rungs in it, and you can climb up that ladder. But that ladder is not God himself. God does not know that ladder. It's a translated sense from God down to humanity. So, we must even see, you see, that God himself is not the science. He's not the science. God himself is just the I am that I am. But God has a science. He has given a science. He has revealed himself to human consciousness in its translated form as a science. But science still is only a symbol. Just as metaphysics is a symbol, so science is still a symbol and not reality itself. It's a very helpful symbol, a symbol that helps us really to free ourselves, so to say, of a limited human consciousness, and gives us a way and a method and an order that we can go along with, which would lead really to the final consciousness of I am that I am. So you can see that finally science will also be left behind. First we leave the physical behind, then we leave the metaphysical behind, and now we are working with science, and this is the office of this age, and this is the duty of this age, to culture that science, that being has a science, and culture it, but only for the purpose that it will help us to leave science also behind in a future stage, and just have the consciousness of the I am that I am. Now that consciousness, if not seen properly, seems to be like the nirvana of the mystics. The nirvana of the mystics is all of that which also only has the I am. But the I am which we arrive at point 8 is a different I am. It's not the nirvana, because it's an I am which has been cultured through a science, and therefore is a very differentiated, very structured I am. That's so that the I am that we can see as the I am that I am is not just an amorphous consciousness. It's a very delicate, very structured, finely structured, like a filigree structured consciousness that can really see through every little detail. That's the difference between science and mysticism, though outwardly the goal seems to be the same. Yes. So, mortal mind would like to take the end for the beginning right away. But that cannot be done. To take the end for the beginning is a secondary phase, that phase of demonstration. There we take the end for the beginning. But the human mind would like, in the ascending way, to take the end for the beginning. The human mind would like to take just that statement in 8 as the beginning, and says, I don't need all this ladder let down from heaven. I am in heaven. The very fact of being is that there is always a complete state of consciousness. Therefore, I start out right at the point of point 8, namely that I see that the I am is being the I am. The I am being the I am-ness. Being, being, being. You can call it the way you like. And feel this is really science. This is really the pinnacle of consciousness. There is no error to overcome. Everything is perfect. God knows no error. God knows no disease. God knows no way, ascending way of understanding that God does not know, and therefore I go out right there where God is, I am that I am. And this is fooling oneself, nothing else but that. Because we cannot have suddenly a consciousness of I am that I am if I don't know the content of this I am that I am. And in order to know the content, that it has a content value, we jolly well have to get rid, really, of our misconceptions, of our limitations, of our false conceptions, yes, and limitations. How can we get rid of that? Through the ascending way of understanding. I hope I have made that very clear. You know very well, in the field of Christian Science, all way back as far as I can remember, anyway, since, say the Bicknell-Young period, one could always see that students of Christian Science felt that they are really highly educated Christian Scientists when they were not bothering about the way of understanding, but just took that standpoint, well, God is, and God is perfect, and God knows no way of understanding. He is what He is, He knows what He knows, He's the all-intelligence, and therefore I go right out from the fact of the I am that I am, and I don't acknowledge anything else. Well, that's right, that's true, if we know what it implies. But in order to know what it implies, we have to get rid of all the limitations in our consciousness first. Or we just try to, what is that word, to put the I am on top of a lot of illusions and just let the illusions put into the subconsciousness, and think that we are somewhere where we are not. And that's fooling oneself. That's the great point. What do you call it when you have a plant and put a new plant into the old plant?
Grafting.
That's what I meant. That's the term I was seeking. That they usually just graft a concept of I am that I am on their consciousness, on their limited understanding, on their limited outlooks, and just think that they are terrific students and very advanced students if they say, well, there is only the I am that I am, and I go out from there. You can't. That's the teaching of John Dorley. He was very much aware of that ascending way. If you are a student of John Dorley, and not misunderstand him constantly, then he teaches over and over what Mrs. Eddy also teaches, that there is an ascending way, uphill all the way, uphill all the way. When you are a student, when you at the point when we culture our understanding, then it's uphill all the way. The whole Genesis chapter is full of ascending and ascending, going higher and going higher. And John Dolly would always show the chart, as we know it today, as an ascending way and as a descending way of both. And not only of a descending way. So only then, when we have gone through this whole culture of freeing ourselves of limited views, until we arrive at the point of I am that I am, then we must see that that was only the way of understanding and not yet the way of demonstration. The way of demonstration is the descending way. And we have here, then, on this chart, the descending way from science, including metaphysics. So that second part here shows now the standpoint of science, the contemplation of the infinite one. That's point 8765, including metaphysics, including the contemplation also of the ideas, namely science, including metaphysics. Point 4321. It's a descending way that corresponds to the ascending way. The descending way is what? Whereas the ascending way is the way of understanding, the descending way is the way of demonstration. You always have those two wings, the wing of understanding and the wing of demonstration. And it is not logical to start with the way of demonstration and then as second the way of understanding, or even leave that out. Just to think that we can start out with the end, with the point 8, and demonstrate that point 8 and translate it right down to the mortal. That end must be the end of an ascending way of understanding. Then, with that consciousness, we really can stay on the top, on the housetop, and never go down. It is actually, therefore, not a descending way. The term may be a bit confusing. We think that then we come down from the mountaintop, as it was also symbolized in the Gospels, that Jesus came down from the mountaintop and was healing in the valley. Well, this is only a symbolic sense. Actually, what we should say is that the descending, it's a descending view, perhaps only. We stick on the housetop, we never go down again, but we look down and see what happens when this I am, still remaining the I am, translates itself right down to the human. So the descending view, perhaps we could have said, the descending outlook is what really is implied here. And here we see how that unfolds. Once we have reached really one of the points of 5, 6, 7, 8, then we can look backward and look down and see what happens. So here we see at the point 8, now we don't see it, we make a break.